I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move to approve the accounts payable, and that would be cycle date 225 through 31. And would have the regular accounts payable checks of $543,650.05, and the payroll checks of $536,457.92. And the payroll and payroll checks and the rest, which is only a meager one-third of the payroll checks, so it's at $217,647.27. Total warrants approved would be $1,297,755.24, noting the county manager has reviewed and approved such.
Second.
Discussion, items of note.
Yes, from this would be the last week that we have accounts payable from the 2018 budget. The total amount from the 2018 budget this cycle is $14,465.75. And specifically, I point out a payment to Smyger Gordon and Meyer Inc. This is in the Public Works Department and engineering for five minor structures, bridge structures. This is work that was done through December 31 of last year, total $6,884.75. We also, for the 2019 budget, we have payments to the town of Haiti, one from the YVRA, for law enforcement services for the month of January of this year, 2019, payment $13,322.05. We also had distributions of our dedicated mill levies, developmental disabilities, and museum and heritage tax funds. And we have a payment to Transatlantic Group Limited. This is YVRA, and this is a vendor that I hadn't seen before. But anyway, this is for the purchase of de-icing chemical at the airport, $17,419.50. Payment to Insight Public Sector Inc. This is from the IT pool. And controllable assets, purchase of 8 Surface Pro PCs for $16,430.08. Payment to Castle Rock Microwave LLC, and this is from the Comstock Pool. This is for a deposit for the microwave contract for the hops to get from dispatch to Mount Warren. That's just the hop from the microwave hop. So anyway, the amount is $89,610.74. Does that answer your question?
All right. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So yesterday we had updates from the county manager, from legal, from human resources, emergency management, the sheriff's office, the deputy county manager, and purchasing.
Madam Chair, I move to approve consent agenda items A and B.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 It's not packed room for these amazing. Do you know I'm Michelle Phoenix?
Come up and introduce yourself. Sit down. It's okay.
Have a chat.
Yep. Yeah. Hi. Introduce yourself.
I love you guys. Sorry.
That's all. No problem.
I am Michelle Phoenix. I'm the executive director for Partners in Rowe County. And I just came to say thank you. I'm guessing you don't get that a ton. And I won't take up much of your time, but truly, like you just said, you don't get a lot of opportunities to do this, and you probably don't get a lot of opportunities for people to do this, but we really do appreciate everything you guys do for the nonprofit community in general, and just our community, because you guys are mentors as leaders. Like, that's just a given. If you're out there writing, you know, letters to the editor explaining civic duties, you know, and I just, that's all I'm saying. Thank you. I got candy. I got mugs.
That is a super
It's a sweet
cool
camping mug, I
worth
think.
Significantly less than $50.
For the record. Oh, I don't want to know what that is all about.
Sorry, we can't accept gifts that are...
It's okay. You didn't pay $50.
Yeah.
And we don't, like, I mean, HRC, but, like, you guys aren't directly, like, you don't fund us,
no,
so I don't, like, see it that way, like a funder. did you guys happen to notice the flamingos?
No.
Okay. Well, out your door.
On our lawn?
Yeah. You have flamingos. You were blocked last night
look
by
that.
Me.
And we gave you permission.
I have learned in some cases. Actually, so we do this every year, usually during January, which is National Mentoring Month, but we decided that's really dumb in a ski area because January is just the worst for everyone. So we are now doing March Mentoring Madness. So we're hoping by the end of March, everyone will be just sick of hearing about partners. We've got 28 kids on the wait list, and that's like the never-ending story of our kids on wait list. So we're really hoping with the March Madness kind of male sports message that we might be able to get at least 5 guys to sign up by the end of, that's our goal for the end of the month.
What does it mean that you blocked us?
All that
I don't know what that
is
means.
We brought some attention to partners, right? Like, that's it. It's pink flamingos.
Got it.
I'm coming to take them right now, and I'll bring them over to Centennial Hall. So if you saw them, just wanted you to know they were there. No, I did not ask for permission.
They should be. They should be social.
I think they're less impact. They're probably all
right. They're in the snow.
They should be social media. Don't
that's what we so we can share it with you. I'm sure we'll tag you, my media person, who's much younger and savvier and all that. we'll do all that. What was I going to say? Actually, the best marketing we got was when they got stolen one year. And so we were in the police blotter for Please Return Our Pink Flamingos. I was like, that. We got more hits and likes and that than anything else. So, again, thank you.
Thanks
for your time.
Great.
Well, thank you guys for your time. Seriously,
great
for me.
I'm glad to see that it's coming forward.
Really cool.
Okay.
Okay.
I think great. This is all. I don't think the snowmobilers are going to come.
At least the people from Iowa.
No, I don't.
You don't think they're headed
Nebraska.
In? All right. So we are having a discussion regarding recreation traffic parking on Route County Road 38A. Do we need folks to introduce themselves for the record? Or yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Why not?
Sounds good. Would you start, Ben?
Ben Bell. I'm the president of Starwood Park Group and Homeowners Association. Jasmine, I liked it.
How'd you get roped into that?
You know, who knows?
Knocked on doors, campaigned.
That was the only elected office I'd ever been to. I ran for commissioner. I don't know what I mean for Doug's district.
Tara Humphreys, Hans Peak Bears District Ranger for the U.S. Forest Service.
Garrett Wiggins, Rock County Sheriff.
Ray Dubois, Public Works Director.
Mike Morty, Assistant Director of Public Works.
Dan Weinheimer, Deputy County Manager.
Tom Sullivan, County Manager.
Doug Munger, Commissioner.
Beth Melton, Commissioner.
Tim Corrigan, Commissioner.
Do you want to start, Ray?
Sure. I just put together a little bit of information. These photos were forwarded to me, I think were taken by one of the residents out there. But the issue is the growing popularity of the Dry Creek area. Up on Forest Service land, but off of County Road 38, and the weekend President's Day weekend, the issue of snowmobilers spilling over from the parking area Dry Lake down onto 38A reared itself again. I don't think this is the first time it's happened. I think this is an ongoing and probably maybe a growing problem. And so there were several complaints made that weekend by locals. The sheriff's department did respond, as a road and bridge was also contacted. And I'll let the sheriff talk about how they handled things. But basically, we just wanted to get people together, do some introductions. Tara Humphreys from the Forest Service as well, to introduce her to people, as well as just continue the discussion and maybe start to come up with some solutions on how we address these type of issues, because these are not going to solve themselves. They're not going away. And I think as Rapp County becomes more and more popular, which I think we all want, how do we handle these sort of interface issues? So So with that, maybe we just turn it over to Mr. Bell, and since he was very involved with the residents on this issue. And
Joe McNasby, I think, is the one that you have contacted, Ray, and Doug, actually, too. Doug came out and looked at this thing. As Ray was saying, this is not something new. This has been going on for years, so how do we address it? And I went to a direct meeting yesterday, and Mike, I think, gave a good background on all the problems that's being caused by,
Are you talking about the two-way and the two-way
radio?
Okay, it's kind of same but different, yeah.
But it's not. Yeah. I don't think it's that different because, as Ray was saying, somehow we have to plan for this stuff. We have to come up with some sort of a way to mitigate what the problems. And Tara was there, so she heard most of the stuff that was going on yesterday. And I understand you can park on county roads. That's legal. I think Doug saw from an email that maybe the road was impeded from if you had emergency vehicles. Snowmobiles on 38 have always been a problem for people using them. It's illegal to be on 38. I'm sure the sheriff doesn't have enough enforcement. You know, there's not enough deputies to be in every place if it's a problem. So that just makes it more important that as a community, we come up with some way to address this. And the only thing I can see, and I've said this before, even when I was a commissioner, we were having problems. I mean, I live out in Strawberry Park, so I know, is for enforcement. How do you pay for enforcement? How do you increase the ability of parking at these places? So it's a difficult situation. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We've talked about it for years. Maybe there's a way with this 2A going on. Maybe there's a way that we should try and address this with Forest Service help. How are we doing?
Do you have, Sheriff, do you want to share your thoughts on enforcement?
Well, yeah, I see that we've got kind of two issues within one here. We've got the issue of what may be perceived as illegal parking when, I think you addressed it, that it's not illegal to park on a right-of-way unless you are blocking traffic or hindering the flow of traffic. I've received some conflicting information. I was told by Mr. McNasby, is that right?
Yeah.
That the roadway was hindered to the point to where a fire truck couldn't get through. And then I was told just the opposite, that there was plenty of room for a fire truck to get through. And I think, Doug,
I drove up there. You could get a fire truck up there.
Okay.
The corner was kind of inhibiting a little bit. But, yeah, you could have backed into Zoe Bible Church and drove on up. So.
And that's the same thing my deputy had relayed to me, that he got there and he thought there was plenty of room. Now, I know pictures can be deceiving. When I'm sitting here looking at this picture, it looks to me like there's plenty of room there, but again, they can be deceived. The other issue is the illegal using of County Road 38 to get to the National Forest. And so that is something we can cite for and enforce. Deputy that responded that day said that he had encountered a couple of snowmobilers just as they were getting back to their trailer. He told me, you can't do that. It's illegal to ride on a county road with your snowmobile.
And they showed up the next day.
And they may have. I don't know.
Because that was the next day that I went up there, and they showed back up the trailer when I was there.
Same ones,
yeah.
And so these guys didn't say that the parking lot was full. They said that some of their friends, as they were coming down, were losing control and fishtailing as they were coming down the roadway. It wasn't the fact that the parking lot was full, it was just they didn't feel comfortable driving all the way up there in these big, heavy rigs. I don't know what, if anything, can be done about that, but I think just some good signage in the area, basically. And I was talking to Ray last week, having some good visible signs saying that it's illegal for you to use County Road 38 as access to the National Forest, and that it would be strictly enforced. I don't know that we stand on very good legal ground saying no parking. I think we can do some type of signage up there that may help. Obviously, you can put all the signs in the world, and there's some people that are just going to ignore them altogether.
you hit the nail on the head earlier, is when people call for our services, sometimes we've only got two deputies on this entire county. And they may be handling other calls for service, so when somebody picks up the phone and they call, they want somebody right now. And depending on what our deputies are handling at the time, it could be 5 minutes if they're just around a corner, it could be up to 3 hours depending on what they're handling. And people get, understandably so, they get a little irritated when the police don't show up when they need them. But it's something that people need to understand that we'll respond as soon as we can, but we have to prioritize our calls as well.
If I may add one other thing, too. Last Saturday, I think it was, I was heading up to meet somebody who lives on 38A. We're going to go up and just ski around Dry Lake down into Silver Creek. The road had been closed for a couple hours because of a trailer had slipped off the road.
And you on 38A?
What?
On 38A?
No, on 38A. Somebody tried to make it up there and slipped off the road. I think it was closed for a couple hours, and then it was finally open. So when I came to meet my friends, it was open, so we were able to drive up there. But, I guess what I'm going to say, and how do we all work together with more uses up there? And I, as long as I've been involved in this thing, I know the Forest Service doesn't really want to improve the parking lot up there too much because they say, well, it'll increase usage. I think there is a plan, and Tara, she probably knows more than I do, there's a plan to make it better for these big vehicles, but it's just a reorientation of the existing parking. It's not putting in a new parking lot, which there is space up there, if you know the area. There's a flat space beyond where the existing gate is. And the other thing, I think Mike pointed this out yesterday, those are gravel roads out there. There's a lot of maintenance on those things. If somehow that was paved, you wouldn't have maybe some of these problems in getting there. You wouldn't have problems.
So a lot of us would disagree with that during the winter.
Road Bridge knows better than I do, but it could be plowed better, whatever. So maybe there's a way that we all work together to make Dry Lake, and not only Dry Lake, maybe the Hot Springs area, a better place for our citizens and our visitors.
Tara, do you want to share thoughts?
So back before Tara starts, though, the parking lot up there has been rebuilt since I've been a commissioner.
I know, but it's still.
And then we still have people getting all the way up there. And then I don't know whether the thing was closed 2 weeks ago when this was a problem, where it was full. But I guess we still have problems, people driving all the way up there and then finding out that it's closed or full and the rest.
What we probably have, Doug, we probably need is some more pictures to show what happens on a weekend, what that would have looked like on President's Weekend. There is this thing, and you guys have to deal with this all the time, is do you build something for Easter Sunday, or do you, it's money. It's all
right.
Money, so how do you make it work?
You don't have to tell us that. All right, go ahead, Tara.
Okay, so you alluded to the parking lot re-engineer, which has recently concluded the NEPA process, and we're hoping for 2020 implementation. You're right in the sense that it doesn't necessarily increase the capacity, but it does engineer it more functional for folks to get in and out. Because we run into a similar issue even when we staff that with our employees and volunteers to help get that parking of line and have conversations with folks in the morning about parking up there, they still have to get turned around, which is currently an issue for a number of those rigs. So we have been staffing it. We have been issuing a handful of warnings and tickets for parking and other violations and infractions up there, but not every day. And that is with volunteer and seasonal staff that we've been doing that before we head out to the trails. So I think we've had some conversations, Mike and Kent and I, about some signage. I think we're just kind of maybe at the implementation piece of that. We've talked about other leveraging other technological solutions. I think There's new parking apps that take some finagling to work through my bureaucracy, but that allow users to have some sort of a priori knowledge before they head up the road and maybe make that decision to go to Muddy Pass or potentially Columbine when that becomes an available recreation area. So I think that's what I would probably contribute to the conversation at this point, unless you had some additional questions.
I have a few questions.
Sure.
Not necessarily for you. Whoever can answer these. So, Ben, you talked about Easter Sunday. How frequently are we seeing that there are these kinds of issues? Is it just in the winter? Is it every weekend? Is it just on these big weekends like President's Day? I mean, what do we know about?
All right. I don't live right up there.
Yeah.
But I do see these big vehicles as the real problem. How do you deal with them? And there's a lot of them these days. I think during the summer, maybe the parking is adequate for the people that go up there to ride their bikes. Remember, in the summer, the road is open, right. So you get past that gate. You know, I think we should look at it as a dead end. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that? And, you know, one thing Tara didn't mention that I think should be, you know, Fish Creek Falls, there is a kiosk and people pay. They have to have a certain thing. Maybe we have to look at, maybe users have to be willing to pay some money to have enforcement. I mean, should the sheriff have to hire a whole new deputy, or should it be some kind of a community project where we're all paying when we go up there to ski or snowmobile or ride bikes, and somehow there's a person there to figure it out.
So I didn't really hear the answer to my question. Do we know how frequently this is an issue?
Of an issue in the winter. And I'm guessing weekend. I don't go up there either, but I'll guarantee you it's probably one weekend a month, probably, out of the 5 months of the winter, 6 months out of the winter.
About so. 4 or 5 weeks ago, I went skiing up there, and I went up on a Wednesday afternoon, and there were probably 30 or 40 vehicles on a Wednesday afternoon parked up there.
Okay. It's packed on the weekends.
Yeah.
It's packed. That parking lot full on a winter weekend is packed, especially in a winter like this when we have constant storms. People are taking their snowmobiles up there, not only to just ride their snowmobiles, but to ride their snowmobiles and ski in the areas that Powder Cats operates, and it's packed.
So we could also anticipate that the frequency of the issue would probably grow as usage is increasing.
And the thing of it is, it's so close to town. You know, when Tara talks about diverting to Columbine, you know, that's another 35 miles that you're going out of town.
And going to a motel at night and then just blowing out of here.
Right.
And Columbine is packed after 9 a.m.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you.
Rabbit Ears is packed. I mean, the sport has gotten to the point to where I just started snowmobiling this year myself. So I can speak from experience.
You're jumping on the bandwagon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just to give you an idea, we went up on Rabbit Ears this past Sunday. I got there at 9 a.m. and by 9:15, at least 20 other vehicles pulled in there and parked.
And we have two really big parking lots up there.
Huge, and those were packed full, really? And they were parked out there on the highway. Columbine has been the same way every time I've gone up there. I have not gone to Buck Pass. That's the one place I have not gone to.
Let me say, not all snowmobiles.
Yeah.
Like, I went up there during the week. It wasn't a weekend. And I could find a parking lot. But it is skiers, too. So
no,
all the users have to be. You can't blame it on the snowmobilers just because they have bigger vehicles. So somehow we have to plan for everybody.
Right. The bigger vehicles are more of an issue, though. They're impeding the road. Not blaming the snowmobilers specifically, but thinking about the issues that have to be addressed.
But they're not going away.
No, no.
And the other thing is that we would rather have one of those big rigs than three of the little rigs. That's a lot more space to take three rigs to pull up the same six snowmobiles. So
I was up there this summer, too, because my youngest kid started riding motorcycles. And I went up there during the summer to Dry Lake and rode with him. it was packed, and it was summertime. I mean, the roads, everywhere you went up there, I mean, everybody was parked on the sides of the roads. Now, obviously, you don't need as big a trailer to haul four motorcycles as you do to haul four snowmobiles, but I think it's probably an issue during the summer as well.
And then I had one other question. Several people alluded to an issue with people getting up the road and getting stuck and being blocked. Do we have any, are there any regulations related to that? Or if people get up there and they get stuck, it's just, all right, now the road is closed. There's
so
no
we don't
ticketing
have a,
or anything
a
like
chain
that?
Law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Well, I know going out to the hot springs, there's a sign that says you have to have four-wheel drive. I don't know if that's an ordinance or if it just
we have
is
the
a
same
sign.
Sign. Just before 38A.
Okay.
So we have at the intersection of 36 and Amethyst talking about having proper equipment going up, and it also states the Colorado revised statute. That happened because last year we had a similar situation. We had a
Mike, will you clarify which statute that is? I mean, just what is it?
Inadequate equipment. Okay. Bad tires. Okay. For your vehicle, because I believe last year we had kind of a similar situation. Somebody went up there, out-of-stater went up there with bad tires, jackknifed their pickup and their trailer, closed the road, and the like. And so that's what kind of precipitated additional signage using kind of 38A as a turnaround for anybody that's going up without the right tires or chains or anything like that.
And so people can be ticketed if they block the road in that situation?
Okay. And they cause an accident. If they go up there and they've got bald tires or two-wheel drive and they cause an accident, they can be ticketed.
But not for blocking the road, just for an accident.
Yeah, we're correct.
Still a discretionary ticket.
Yeah. So I was just curious what the applicable rules are. You said you had some questions.
Yeah, I got three questions for Garrett and one for Tara. Talking about that, my experience, at least with the State Patrol, has been that if you run your car off the road into a ditch, you get a ticket, and there's the presumption that you're guilty of improper mountain driving.
I think you're correct in that belief. I think the statutes have changed in the last few years.
Oh, okay.
But there still are applicable statutes where if you lose control of your vehicle for whatever reason,
you're guilty of improper mountain driving. So we could ticket anybody that runs into the ditch.
Yeah, you could.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's for someone driving a snowmobile up the road, if convicted, what's the fine?
I don't know what that numerical value is, but it's driving an unlicensed vehicle on the roadway.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if the fine schedule could be adjusted to make it really painful.
Well, the other thing, you know, is it legal? It's legal in a lot of other states. Without us putting some signs up the road, I mean, I would be supportive of putting some signs on 38, right at the intersection of 38A, up that road there, so that people understand that it's not legal to run your snow machines on the road. Because it's legal
road.
In a lot of other states.
On a maintained road. There's also, I believe, another revised statute that you can run your snowmobile on a non-maintained county road. But on a maintained county road, you can't run your snowmobile on it. Because in the past, through Planning Commission, we've had some people that have wanted to have snowmobile tours up kind of in the California Park area.
Right, exactly.
Because we don't maintain those certain sections of road, they can run on the county right away.
Right.
Up there with their snowmobiles.
My other question is, I've been confused about this concept of how much of the county road you can block, and it appears that, like in this photograph, you can block one lane, just not both lanes. So is it, can I just drive up County Road 14 and park my car in one of the lanes of traffic on County Road 14 and you won't ticket me?
It's a little bit of a slippery slope, you know, because most statutes are subject to interpretation, and you may interpret the statute a little bit different than I do. But if it is blocking the flow of traffic, then we can't cite for that.
So in this particular case, there's such a low flow of traffic, it's not an issue. But on County Road 14, blocking one lane would be interrupting the flow of traffic. That would be your interpretation. That which makes perfect sense to me. I would support that interpretation. I'm not planning on parking my car blocking one.
The other thing is that, you know, it'd be different if they were up there when we were plowing the road at 6 or 5:30 in the morning too.
That's a big
problem. You know, that would be obstructing traffic in my mind. It would warrant a ticket.
So usually it's our perception that as long as there is at least one lane of traffic, that nobody's violating the law. I mean, on 14, you could even believe if you believe that if you were hindering the flow of two-way traffic, because 14 doesn't have much of a shoulder, that just one bicycle being on the side of the road could be cited for that, because you basically got to wait for the oncoming traffic to pass before you can safely pass them on the bicycle. So generally speaking, our philosophy is as long as there's at least one lane that can allow the flow of traffic, then that's, in our mind, it's illegal.
And then I've got two questions for you, Jared. Number one, have you considered creating that as a fee site? And making it a fee site would have the effect of controlling some of the traffic up there?
Yeah, I would say that we've had preliminary discussions about that, but it really hasn't gone forward at this point in time for both summer and winter.
So help me understand from the Forest Service perspective, what are the negatives associated with creating a fee site?
Maintenance, basically the level of maintenance and the facilities that we have to make that a fee site.
Which is building a little hut.
Restrooms, a handful of facilities, that boxes that have to be checked in order for us to make it a fee site, and then go through the committee to get approval to make it a fee site.
And would you have increased enforcement if it were a fee site? Would the enforcement change, the parking enforcement? And I mean, I imagine you'd have to monitor whether people were paying the fees. So would that require an increase in enforcement of what's happening currently?
Potentially.
Okay.
I mean, even just like you have on a lot of your campgrounds, which are unmanned, the metal tube, if you're going to park here, it's $20. Put your money in the thing, and you're not going to catch everybody, but occasionally you go up and check and see if people have paid. And in the meantime, you're collecting money.
Right.
So I would support that. I guess is the point that I'm saying.
But then does that just drive people down to 38A? They park there, don't pay the fee, and then buzz up the road.
How do we handle that in other places? Like, is the road up to, I don't know if it's in the city or not, the road up to Fish Creek, for example, is that in the city? It's not a county road.
No, it's a county road.
It is a county road. So people park on the road there sometimes. I mean, how is that handled?
They're forcing themselves into a longer walk.
But are they allowed to just park there and then not pay the fee?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're supposed to pay the fee regardless.
So they're still supposed to pay the fee?
Because the fee is for the use of the area, the not for the parking.
Right.
There's the ADA portion of that facility, volunteers, water, various amenities that make it a fee site.
Camp host.
And then my last question, I mean, and we've talked about, well, maybe not so much with you, but I know in the past we've talked about how much the Forest Service is interested in working on dispersing all different kinds of uses into less used areas around the county.
Yeah, and one thing...
What does that look like? I mean, how do you... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You can finish, and then I'll ask my question.
Okay.
You're interrupting. I'm a
terrible interrupter. Oh, I just have better self-control than both of you.
Could be.
I think what I would share about that area in particular is, of course, the campground and the parking re-engineer that we hope to have in 2020. Another thing that we hope to do in 2020, and we're working through the NEPA process right now, is to make some improvements to the actual road, hoping that that will help disperse some of it and make some improvements to the Summit campground as well, encouraging folks to...
You're talking about dispersal within a narrow area.
Yes, just in that particular area that we're having the conversation about. Yeah, I mean, I guess
it's always been interesting to me as a living in South Route, spending as much time as I do in and around the flat tops, the end of the Dunkley Pass Road. You know, There's plenty. You could triple the traffic up there. It's a beautiful place to go. Same thing, Gore Pass. There's great snowmobiling on Gore Pass. Nobody ever goes up there.
Right.
And there's, you know, parking available up in that area as well.
So I guess that is partially answers my question, but what does it look like when, I mean, how do you disperse? How do you encourage disbursement?
I'd say for the most part, it's a build it and they will come scenario.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Build it, advertise it, educate, engineer.
Got it.
But you wouldn't need, I mean, say on the Dunkley Pass Road, there's nothing that needs to be built up there.
I am not familiar with that area. I'm just
okay.
going to tell you that right now, Tim.
Okay.
I have not been there.
You should go. It's lovely.
I mean, you go up there.
There's not many people.
On a typical weekend, there may be 7 or 8 snowmobile rigs parked up there. There's probably room to park 40 or 50.
Yeah, so that would just be the education portion, sharing through the snow folks. And
is there a place to turn around?
Yep, there's a big
road. So the bottom line is we need to come up with some type of direction here.
Yeah, the big triangle.
Can I add something to this discussion here? Is for some reason, the Forest Service has been reluctant to expand the parking. Even Tara said that. And I forget who said it, maybe it was Ray. Dry Lake is so close to Steamboat Springs that I don't care how much you're going to try and disperse the use, the use is going to increase. So unless we're working on some kind of infrastructure improvements and enforcement, this is going to be a problem for the sheriff and for Ray and Mike forever. So, and it may still be, but you need to increase the ability for the citizens and the public to park. I mean,
so you double the size of the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that 2 or 3 years from now, it'll be full and you'll have the same set of issues.
Because what is the saturation level for that area? As close as it is, I think, I totally agree. I think if you double the parking lot, you're going to have that many more people trying to go up there. And so we really haven't addressed the issue of 38A, of what do we do there, you know? I mean, really the only way that I see to do it is that you limit the number of people that go up there, have a permit situation. Maybe it's free permits, but you have to apply for a permit and you have to post it. And then if you don't have a permit, you don't go up there.
Somebody's going to have to administer that.
Somebody has to administer it.
And
somebody's
going to have to make a pencil the nickels and dimes out of it.
But I'm going to say there's enough usage up there that if you had some kind of TLC or you were paying some kind of fee, you could have enforcement. And the permit process, hey, it could be online and it's full. I mean, enough permits have been bought for the day. And you can't go up there. I mean, those technological systems exist if we're not willing to expand the facility.
All of that would be Forest Service, though.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
That
totally.
Wouldn't be us.
I've always heard, can you keep that money? Or does that money go into the USA General Fund if you had a kiosk up there?
Some of it we get to keep and spend. We have a very direct authority that we can spend those monies on as they come in.
So let's just say we as a collectively decided that we all thought it was a good idea that the Forest Service limited use. Is there a process by which we would engage with the Forest Service to encourage that? Or is that part of your plan, the forest plan?
Well,
there has to be some process where we can express our opinion.
Yeah, but it might be 10 years from now before it commences.
For rec fees, and I would have to look on the specific nuances of how we would hedge down that road. I would think one thing that I would add to the conversation, just at least anecdotally with having conversations and being up there just to experience the pass at its best in winter and summer, is folks don't particularly seem hindered by monetary infringements, whether it's a ticket or a fee. They have a lot of money invested in their rigs and their time. And
I totally agree with that. I think what you'll do is you'll dissuade locals from going up there. And then I think the people that come in with their 6-place, 8-place trailers came in from Iowa. I mean, if you charged them $200, they're going to pay the $200.
Sounds like a revenue opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
but what have you done for the locals?
But what we've been wanting
but
to get
I,
rid
I
of
think that's
is
a pretty
the parking
broad
on 38
A. I mean,
we're gonna have to get up there early. Too.
Garrett will pay $200 to take a snowmobile.
No, not me. I had to borrow it.
No, if you had online permit system. If I was planning with my kids to go up there, I could get one ahead of time. So, and maybe there's a different fee structure between if I go up there in my Subaru or I go up with a big rig. So, yeah, I think there's ways that you wouldn't have to
harass
the locals too much.
One thing that I think people are overlooking here just a little bit, maybe it's just because they don't know, but and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Forest Service historically has only had one law enforcement officer for this entire area, entire northwest Colorado. And so they can't be everywhere. And so to do something like that, you need an enforcement mechanism to make sure that people were following through and they had their correct permits.
And a revenue stream to support it.
Exactly. And so the Forest Service don't have the personnel to patrol the amount of land we have. Now that's why they pay us a certain amount every year for my deputies to go to do forest patrol. So that's one of the things, and I'm sure that's it's a financial obligation that the Forest Service would have to commit to.
If you're out there collecting a couple $3,000 a day in revenue use fees,
could facilitate
you can afford to hire an FTE.
Yeah.
So how much? A
couple thousand a day.
Yeah, really?
Oh, no, you could.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you would collect that much on a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That's $10 a shot.
So again, bottom line, though, it's out of our purview. We need to provide some direction to her to have that happen. We have the things that are in our power stream to do the things that we can do.
And I think we need to put. Doesn't mean she's going to do it.
So
well, that's why I agree. So yeah, we can.
So we need to wrap this conversation into some direction. To Commissioner Monger's point, I heard a couple things. It sounds like you guys are already working on signage, and there's a thought that at least is worth doing, whether we know what the impacts of that are going to be. Is that?
I agree.
Yeah.
I think signage would be step number one.
So what signage? I think we need no snowmobiling on road on 38A. Right?
I think the no parking signage doesn't make a lot of sense based on what you were saying.
Great big nasty sign.
And that way they know when they come out there they're not going to.
Yeah.
So that might eliminate the parking as well. So in the short term.
And then it sounds like we would like to, and correct me if you guys don't agree, but try to engage with the Forest Service on understanding what options might exist for mitigating some of that use, whether it's fees, whether it's permits, what the future of that parking lot is, some of those kinds of things. So if you could find out for us what that process would be, I think that would be
Do we have an active rack?
Helpful.
No.
That would be a perfect place for the rack.
That, I don't know what that means.
Died
Resource
5 years
Advisory
ago.
Committee.
Okay. Resource Advisory Committee, yeah.
Okay. Was there any other direction that you all wanted to provide to these folks?
Well, I missed that kind of a little bit. Are we saying that we would like to have them come up with some fee for you?
Well, I think we want to understand what the process would be for us to give them our opinion on this, because it sounds like we're not clear on what that is. Is that right? That just telling you isn't really sufficient, unless it is.
It's sufficient for me.
Absolutely.
I'm looking to the official of interaction among us. And I'm sure.
Well, I think the direction would be if it facilitates starting the process for you guys. This thing's not going to go away. I think everybody agrees that it's not going to go away.
Right.
So we need to figure out a tool or whatever tools we might have to minimize it a little bit. So, and if that's a fee for use, I'm supportive of that.
You know, one thing that I forget who made the comment. I don't think that we have any information surveys about how many people are parking when and where and whatever. So somehow, for Tara to know how much she how much money she could make on fee structure, you have to know how many people are up there. Do you have the fire survey?
I have very rough surveys.
Do you have some?
Yeah.
So is there a need for more data, or is that?
That's probably good.
You feel sufficient on that? Okay. Other comments?
So I guess in the bigger perspective, I mean, we support these guys coming out and they're spending motel money in the community. That's part of our, there are 50% public lands, so people use them. So
absolutely.
I'm supportive of that, just so we can get by it with our governmental services that we're providing. They're not infringing upon our local residents that actually live out there.
I would agree on both points. All right. Thank you.
See you, Ben.
We have a presentation from the Northwest Colorado Oil and Gas Watch. If you would introduce yourselves for the record, and we'll take your presentation.
Sure. I'm Roger Steen, and I'm a Rock County resident.
Diane Miller, Rock County resident.
Sarah Jones, Rock County resident.
This one's on, too.
So I have a question to start off with. Are you guys a 501c3, or are you a recognized incorporation, or are you a group?
We are a group. We got together a few weeks ago and came up with a name for the three. There are actually four of us, and Cody Perry is the fourth. He couldn't make it today. All right, Sarah, how do you get this on slideshow?
Oh.
I have a slideshow.
Yeah.
Present click, online? No.
Click the one that says from beginning, right the far left.
That one?
File. Nope.
No.
Yeah, that one works too, apparently.
Okay. All right. Good. And what this presentation is not about is Senate Bill 184, 181, that has sort of upstaged us. That is the proposed legislation before the Senate, the Colorado Senate, right now, and it's a very big thing. And that relates to state permitting processes. What we're going to talk about is the federal process of leasing oil and gas in Northwest Colorado, and of course, Rock County being part of that. About 2 years ago, the Trump administration had decided to increase the amount of leasing. This was the push for energy independence. And so there were substantially more leases being offered in Rock County. The four of us sort of independently started to review those leases, and with the purpose of attempting to see if there are any sensitive areas that were being proposed to lease, sensitive to Rock County and its economy. Those include impacts on people, on population centers, and on the environment. And we realized that the four of us doing the same thing made little sense, so we got together and also gathered some of the more recent tools that are available online to review the leasing to see if there are any sensitive areas that we should be commenting to the BLM on. Now, we determined, let me find out how you advance this. That one, okay. That is our purpose. It remains our purpose. The issues of concern. This is a partial list, but it has to do with public welfare and environment. And so these are the a list of some of the issues that we will be looking at.
Hopefully not today.
You don't have time. We'd be here until midnight. We found out that the public has limited standing in front of the BLM to comment on these sorts of things. So, and frankly, in the interest of the county and in our somewhat selfish interest, we decided that we would present this to you folks because the BLM appears to respond more directly, more with more interest in your comments to them. We found that with the with BLM's non-leasing policies, there is very little time to review the leases and to determine if there are any sensitive areas and then comment back to them. I believe we're dealing with 2 week time periods. So we also are gathered together to review these leases as efficiently as possible, get back to you folks the what we think are concerns in the county, and leave it to you to decide whether or not these are things to be commented on.
Roger, excuse me, can you hold the microphone a little bit further away?
Further, I'm sorry. Does the microphone work here?
Yeah, okay. It's just amplifying a little bit in here. It's fine, yeah.
Got it, okay. Maybe I don't need the microphone at all. We'll start by, and today we're starting with our focus on Route County itself. Since the impacts from oil and gas extend over property, over county boundaries, we're going to expand this to impacts from proposed development in Moffitt, Rio Blanco counties, and we'll also look a little bit at Jackson County. Jackson being the place where we there's a lot of fishing that goes on, a lot of fishing and hunting over there that that our people who spend time here actually go and partake in. So those are the regions that we're going to be looking at. I decided that today we will look a bit at what's happening in Rock County simply as background information for you. I think it certainly was useful for us to see this information and perhaps to you too. We went to the COGCC, Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission data sets, and which are on the internet to pull up some information on production. Here is what we got a month ago, and Chris is here. Chris Brookshire may get this information too, but there are a total of 23 producing wells in 2018, 23 wells that reported production data. Four of them are moderate in size, two of them on Wolf Mountain, one is the southwest of Haiti.
So you're mixing apples and oranges here again. Now, you're talking about private land leasing versus public land leasing. You started off on the public land leasing, and now we're talking about the whole oil and gas industry.
We're talking about the resource right now, not the land ownership.
But that's not what your presentation is about.
It's about BLM, who administers the public
resource. So how many of them 23 leases are on public lands?
Very few.
Very few.
That's right.
And you say, well, it's, you know, I'm a little pushed here, guys.
You know, okay. I'm a little pushed by this whole presentation. I'm a little pushed by you guys. You think that we're going to allow you four, the most radical environmentalists in our whole county, to come advise us on how we should respond. We're quite clear about the collaborating agency situation. We've been doing that since I've been a commissioner. We've been doing that. I don't know, wasn't born yesterday, didn't get off the bus yesterday. So I don't know what the heck we're wasting our time here talking about doing. That you're going to provide us your irrational, in my mind, view on the oil and gas business, and especially when we have this new bill coming out of the Senate. Right now, that's why we don't have any oil and gas rigs right now, because of $50 barrel oil. So, you know, I don't know what we're doing here and why you're even, as far as I'm concerned, I thought we would be good to allow you guys to have your presentation, make it quick, be done,
provide us, you guys, and whether I want to see you again, no. And, you know, again, you can provide your comments of what sensitive areas in your subjective mind, what those sensitive areas are, and then we can determine if it meets the sensitive areas of what we determine for the rest of the population that's not part of the foremost radical environmentalists that we have in the county.
Now, Doug, I think you should give these folks a chance to finish their presentation.
I have
a completely different take than you.
Ted.
We would present the information to you, and it's totally up to you to decide whether or not there's any value at all to it. Furthermore, and you'll see later in our slides, we say if this information is not useful to you, we won't waste your time in the future. We understand that can be, that's your discretion. I mean, we're simply offering something that we thought took time to do, and that it was difficult for everybody who's interested to gather this data independently. That was the purpose. It's not to try to force you to do anything or to, it's simply to say, this is what we saw, and you can do with it what you want. We realize that this is opinions of ours, and that's as far as it goes. Now, are we the most radical people in the county? I honestly doubt that. Environmentalists in the county. I think we're actually fairly practical. Shall we continue, or
I would appreciate you continuing. Yeah, and you.
All right, roll through it.
All right, here goes.
We've seen the PowerPoint too, so
okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we
these
also
are
have
these
some
are all related to federal minerals. They're not private minerals. It's okay. Here we go. What we thought you might want to see is the relative production across the four counties, us, plus the ones that are surrounding us. And you can see that Rio Blanco County has a great deal more liquids production than Rob County. Rob County, the second one over, is actually very, very, very minor, 50,000 barrels a year. Jackson is increasing. It is growing rather substantially. Year by year. Moffitt is decreasing slightly. Rio Blanco is decreasing slightly. I don't know if the decrease is significant, but that's what's happening in Northwest Colorado. Just to show you relative interest of other counties, Weld is there. Weld is huge. You can see why Weld's impacts are often drive what happens in the state. So that's simply for your perspective. I checked back, well, it seems so big, I checked back in a week ago and found out that the data has changed a little bit, but it's still 10 times more, 20 times more than any other county. This I thought was an interesting slide. It shows where all the leases are that are being held right now in 2016 and 2018. Some important things to notice, of course, we have the leases in Northwest Round County. We have a set that are in the Pagoda Williams Fork River area. If you go out to the west a little further off the slide, that is the town of
Pagoda.
Sorry?
Hamilton.
Hamilton, thank you. Hamilton. And there is this trend here, which is north and south of the airport. Now, Hayden is sitting right about there, and Oak Creek is sitting right about here. So you can see where the industry is interested in the resource.
Roger, I'm sorry to interrupt. Will you just define for me what it means that there are leases in these areas?
Yes.
Excuse my ignorance.
The BLM is the administrator of the public oil and gas resource across the country in all federal lands. and offshore.
Minerals.
Now, basically, those are our resources. Those are the public's resources. BLM administers them. And they go out to the oil and gas companies, to the public, every 6 months and say, what would you like to lease from this group of resources that we have? And they ask, the companies ask for certain leases to be made available. Within a six-month period, the companies can bid on those leases, and then they're awarded and paid for.
And so these leases are all on public lands, correct?
No.
Or not?
So this is split estate trust.
Subsurface minerals that are owned by the federal government that could be underneath your private
land. Okay, thank you. That's helpful clarification.
Yeah. It's complicated. Now, on this map, you can see the private land is all of the white. So you can tell that almost all of these leases are the BLM resource or the federal resource on private land. There are a very small number of leases on state land. There are a very small number on Forest Service land.
So almost all number of private land. Clarify, all of these identified parcels are federal minerals?
Yes.
Okay. Regardless of their location.
So the purple and the red are the same?
Yes.
The red ones are held by production, and the purple ones are currently leased, but not necessarily under production.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you can see between 2016 and 2018, we've had a little slight bit of reef infill there, but the main difference is right in here in Oak Creek. We've had those leases come up and be purchased.
Again, a number of those leases may very well be underneath private land.
They are.
Okay.
Essentially, see the white. This white boundary is all private land.
Okay.
That boundary is private land. So those.
I mean, there's a little bit of BLM.
Yeah, that's not real. There's BLM out there.
There's some the yellow. There's a little yellow.
Yeah.
Got it.
That is primarily the case. Yeah, Doug, you're right. They're not completely on. There are some on state land. There's some on forest land. The thing to pick up here is the extent of leasing on private land, and the increase in this area. My guess is if there are any conflicts in the future, they'll probably be in the Oak Creek area or the Hayden area. We don't know. That's just a guess. All right. I'm going to skip over that. Here is a map of the leases that were issued as of June 2017. You can see this is the area just west of Oak Creek, and you can see how much more is leased in Jackson, how much is over in the Rangeley area, and this is the Peons area. 2018, we have the Peons lease area. Okay, and a very, very small amount in Rock County. Now, the conclusion you come to from this is that there is very little leasing going on now in Rock County. But there are a lot of leases that are being held by companies, and they're paying for those. They pay an annual fee for holding those leases. There must be a reason for them holding those leases. And we're assuming that means that eventually they want to produce from them when the economy gets right. It's important for us to be concerned about where the leases are occurring, because any of them could be developed depending on the economics of the future. I do want to point out, going back, how do you do that? Where's the arrow for back? Another one. I do want to point out that where am I going? All right, I forgot. We'll go ahead. Oh, okay. I want to point out that there was a, as of the December 2018 lease sale, there was a dramatic effect from commissioners and local governments complaining about the proposed leases from the BLM, and in fact, the BLM pulled majority of those leases off of the table. 90% of the leases were taken off. So there is a good example of the value of the local government agencies commenting on concern over sensitive impacts.
So, but they pulled those leases prior to them being leased.
Yes. Yes.
Once they're leased, they're leased.
That's another point. Once those are
not necessarily,
the knowledge you could do.
They pulled off the Thompson Divide. They were leased, and they pulled them back, and they paid them off.
They
paid
them off. Bought off those leases. Yeah, they can be paid off. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. I'm not into that.
And I'm not, and we're going to run out of time here really quick, Roger. And I think at the risk of putting words into your mouth, this group, the goal of this group is to let us as commissioners and let the public know that these leases are taking place, potentially providing the opportunity if we, the commissioners, or people in the public had serious concerns about some of the areas and the potential impacts upon wildlife and the other potential impacts from oil and gas development, at least it makes us aware of what's going on and would give us the opportunity to weigh in and give comment.
The whole purpose is an education. It's not an attempt to direct. It's an educational presentation. That's it. And we have no other goal other than that.
Okay. So at this particular point in time, this group doesn't have any recommendations to us in terms of drawing to our attention, hey, we think this is an inappropriate place for oil and gas development, and you commissioners should think about filing some kind of a comment?
Correct. There is nothing from the 2019 proposed lease sale that we're recommending you do anything with, because there were no leases that were made available in Brown County.
And I just have one other question. What is the length of once these properties have been leased, how long is that lease valid for?
Well, it's 10 years unless it has been unitized or proven to be productive. And that can carry it on more, indefinitely.
So after these developers or potential developers pay the original lease amount, you made a reference to an ongoing annual payment that they need to make to keep the leases alive?
I think it's $2 per acre.
Oh, okay.
They usually have a bonus payment up front. And remember that Colorado gets 50% of whatever these leases are, and they split that 50% between the state and us. So that money comes right straight back to us as well, whether they drill on it or not. So keep that in mind, too.
So we are running short on time, and I know we cut into your time a little bit, which I'd like to give you a couple more minutes, but I just want to move us along here.
Zero.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think I was going to kind of go over the inherent risks or impacts, possible impacts of oil and gas, but I don't need to go over this to save us time. But I think when we're talking about basically writing a summary or an overview of the potential lease lands and identifying if we see, looking at things like where the truck traffic would be, waste disposal issues, those kinds of things, potential impacts for water or air in those areas, wildlife. Those are the things that we would note in the summary to provide to you.
So, there's no impact to a leasing. It's in the drilling. And we went through our drilling applications and our special use permit process 2008-09 during all of this stuff, and we spent a lot of time on it. So, you know, we don't need to hear about the impacts of leasing because there is no impacts to leasing. The impacts are to the drilling. And if there's changes that we need to accomplish in the permitting process of our special use permits, that's a whole different thing of addressing than in the leasing process.
Well, I would disagree with you a little bit because we do have the precedent over in Grand County where prior to lease sales, there was an area
that was very sensitive,
and the Grand County Commissioners wrote a letter to the BLM, and the BLM did, in fact, withdraw some of those leases from the lease sale, prior to the lease sale, which kind of prevented a whole bunch of controversy and difficulty later down the road. So, I appreciate the service that you guys are offering here. We don't have the capacity within our own staff. You know, we don't have enough people available in our planning department to be able to follow this as closely as you guys are doing. And I think that whether you're in favor of or against oil and gas development, the idea that we know what's going on in our backyard, I think, is an inherently good thing. What we choose to do with it is
so we're going to have to hear the other side too. So we're going to have Koga come in and Westlake Koga come in, and we probably offer the same half hour to them too. Have listened to their story too.
Perfectly happy.
And you know, if we're going to have a committee, it's going to be advising the county commissioners on the direction of this. It needs to be a balanced committee.
Well, so again, these guys are just citizens that are offering information. They're not an official entity of any kind whatsoever.
So that's fine. So we can take it a grain of salt, or we can absorb it all.
That's correct.
Yep.
I think we need a different approach to that.
Yep.
I also appreciate the information, and I think the fact that we don't have staff that can monitor these things. I think we have 10 times more people sitting in the room right now than we have for almost any agenda item. So I think to me that speaks to the interest of the community in understanding this information. I think if there is a different side of the story that we need to be inviting in, then we should do that. I mean, for the sake of our transparency and just for our citizens and having all information be heard. But I would be in support of continuing to receive this information.
I guess while I really totally appreciate what you're presenting to us today, it's being painted in terms of unbiased information, but surely there are some areas that are not appropriate, and you'd like to tell us about that too.
Right. Well, right now there are no leases available for commenting on.
Right.
So there are two lease sales that are still in the hopper.
We're late to this game here because they've already
because the big one was in June 2017. But I guess what we're proposing is that we will pay attention, and if the if there are leases, we'll just bring in the information. And
future leases.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Future leases.
I think I would also just acknowledge Commissioner Monger's point that we can't sit here and pretend that that there's no inherent bias here in terms of what your opinion is. I think we're all very well aware of what that is. It's important, I think, for us to acknowledge that in understanding this information. Not that the information is biased, but that we understand where you
are. We all have biases.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not me, but everybody else.
I'd like to put one thing out there. It's easy to forget, and that is there is a federal leasing process, and then there's a state and local permitting process. They're independent. We are dealing with the federal process here. Right now, at the state level, there's a lot of activity on the state process. And frankly, if I weren't here, I'd be there commenting on it. They're independent. And the federal process is one where you have leases. That is the time the public has input. And that's what we tried, that's what we focused on here. We didn't talk at all about the state process. And frankly, we don't know what it's going to be. It's changing.
I'm looking at the time. I want to be respectful of the fact that some of us have to eat lunch. So I believe that there are some folks here who would like to make a comment. I want to keep that really brief. Am I correct that there are some folks here who would like to make a comment? Okay. So again, want to keep that very brief. So we'll just hear comments if you'd like to. Catherine's first. Come on up to the podium, Catherine. Thanks for rolling that over, Tom.
Hi, my name is Catherine Carson. I'm involved in various organizations, but I'm speaking today as a citizen of Steamboat Springs in Rouse County. And first, I would like to make the friendly reminder to everyone that this is Rouse County. It's not Washington. We don't call each other names or put labels or titles. We all are here because we care about our community. And the best we have, of course, is friendly, respectful discourse. So next thing is I want to applaud a group of local citizens for bringing to light a process that I find, as an activist, very challenging to make comments on, and that's the BLM process. I feel I'm pretty well versed in finding information and making comments to various federal, state, and local organizations. And BLM is the most challenging one to identify the situations that are occurring and to actually make comments on their website. So I applaud the fact these citizens are bringing this to light. And I would encourage the county commissioners to be proactive and use their broad view of Rouse County to research and identify whether it is an opportunity to make a case for the BLM to either support or oppose or make any comments to BLM. I feel as a citizen, it's one of the reasons we elect you guys, is to represent us and to be our voice for important areas in our county. So I encourage you to, if you're uncomfortable with using citizen information, look at your budget and hire staff. This is an important part of our community, and I encourage you to be our voice in how best way the best we can share our concerns and opportunities with BLM as citizens of Rouse County. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
Hi, Harry Thompson, Citizen Supporting Property Rights. I'll be very brief. I want to thank you for your time on this. I kind of wonder why we're here. I'm not really sure what this group has in mind, and I don't understand why they're basically, it seems like they're trying to invite themselves to the table, when in my mind the table's full. I don't believe that staff has asked anybody to help them. I don't think that the BLM has asked for any assistance in these matters. And quite honestly, there's a process once this begins. There's a process that we go through. There's probably not, in my mind, going to be a lot of activity anyway. And we see a group of people coming here, and we all know which side of the issue they're on. I just don't think that we need to have them directing anybody or putting anything in anybody's minds of how things should be happening. And I want to thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Any other public comment? All right.
I just have
one
question.
Yeah. Go ahead. You're fine. You don't have to make public comment. You're a commissioner.
Oh, okay. looking at this map, I see that a lot of those oil and gas leases are in South Rouse County. Does Rocky Mountain Wild have an overlay of sage grouse habitat for that? I would be interested to see the overlay of the sage grouse habitat over those leases.
We probably have it.
I guess I could probably get that from
Emmy. From Emmy, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Yes. Other? All right. With that, we will break for lunch. Thank you. Thank you all for your time. All right, let's get started. We have, we have a presentation of the stewardship annual reports by the land trusts. Are you going to give us some information before we start, Helena?
Yes.
Okay.
Per the terms and conditions of our agreement concerning conservation easement that we enter with the land trusts when we do our PDR projects, the entity that holds the easement has to provide us with a monitoring report annually. So today we have
Cattlemen's Land, Ag Land Trust, Yampa Valley Land Trust, and the city are here present. Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and TNC were not able to participate. So I would say have Megan start.
Sure.
With the Cattlemen's Land Trust.
Great. Come on up.
Chelsea, we've met.
Hi.
I'm Megan Knott. Cattlemen's Land Trust.
Megan, how are you?
Hi, Megan. How are you? So, pretty straightforward on our report. There's 27 conservation easements that we have reporting requirements with you from 2018. This past year, we've closed two more, so next year you'll see two more on that list. Nothing, no concerns, no conservation easement violations or anything like that. I think mostly everyone was dealing with the drought last year, and on years like that, conservation easement stewardship is generally sort of easy because no one has time to do anything else. So
I saw you put that in your report quite often. It was dry.
We've
really was dry.
Several dry years in a row, so water is always an issue, and we're looking at that closely as abandonment lists come out. We've really been working on water due diligence, but yeah, besides that, pretty straightforward. Do you guys have any questions, or do you have questions about the stewardship in general?
Yeah, maybe for Commissioner Melton's benefit, you might describe the process you use to review the status of these conservation easements on the properties that you're
the process
responsible
of what
for.
You do, yeah.
Sure, yeah. So when we take a conservation easement, and through the PDR program, one of the pieces of due diligence that's required is a baseline, and that's the report of what the property looks like now. So then every year we go out and check that property in relation to the baseline to see what's changed and if it's changed in accordance with the conservation easement. If it's not in accordance with the conservation easement, that would be what we call a violation, and we have to notify you guys per the terms of the easement when we find that violation and then how we resolve it. And then on top of easement violations, there's always a bunch of kind of general stewardship issues, which are things we're just keeping an eye on to make sure that they don't become violations. So we have on the first page of those, the first couple pages of those monitoring reports, you'll see all the specific property information. And then the next 6 to 7 pages is kind of the questions we go through with the landowners. So we'll go out, meet the landowners, interview them, tour the property, document anything that's changed, and then that goes in the permanent file. All the land trusts have endowments that cover that staff time associated with going out and visiting the properties, and also the staff time associated with resolving issues. We have a secondary fund that would cover violations, court cases and stuff like that. And we also have conservation easement insurance, which I don't know if you know about. That's through the Land Trust Alliance, which provides us up to $500,000 in coverage to make sure those violations are resolved.
So I think it's pretty impressive that you have 28 properties in Route County, and all of your property owners are observing the terms of the conservation easements. It's very gratifying.
Yeah, we have 355 statewide. We've had 57, I think is the number, of violations in our entire history. The majority of those are just procedural, like they signed an oil and gas lease and we didn't get a chance to approve it, but the lease is still okay. Something like that, where it's like they didn't follow the procedure, but the action was okay. Major or minor violations are classified by their impact to the conservation values, and we've had, I think, maybe 13 of those in our history, so pretty low rate of violation, and I think a lot of that has to do with landowner outreach. They know you're coming to check. We do education to the landowners about what the terms are, and they follow them pretty much, so. That's the goal, anyway.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. I mean, it's a big investment on the part of the Route County taxpayers to purchase these easements or help you purchase these easements. And, you know, the values that we get from the water being kept in the valley, which is a generally the case on these conservation easements, that we're protecting the water at the same time. And the open space, the conservation values, wildlife values. It's a great program. I think Colorado Cattlemen's does a pretty good job.
Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate partnering with you guys. Route County's had a lot of investment in conservation easements. Our current number is 32,000 acres in the county. So it's a good chunk.
Pretty significant.
So I have one specific question.
Okay.
And I won't name names, but there was one that had a hunting cabin on it, and then the hunting cabin left, and then another, a new hunting cabin was put in. Was that all under a building permit?
Did under a building permit?
Yeah.
I'm sure they went to you guys to get a permit, yeah.
You sure of that, or do we need it?
I talked with the planner, Alan. What's the planner's
name? Yeah.
He sent me information, because generally when there's a permit pulled for our conservation easement, Alan and I coordinate, because he wants to make sure it's in conformance with the conservation easement. So that's my role. My role is to make sure that
right.
I review if it's in the conservation easement and I send stuff to Alan. And that's all that's my only role in the permitting process.
Okay. So Alan was aware of it, so that means it probably was getting a planning check off for the building department then probably. So
that's my understanding. I mean, if you want us to go back in our records, I can look at my correspondence with Alan, but
no, I'll ask Alan. He'll be in later. I'll just check with him, because again, for it's part of our process too, to make sure it gets on the tax rolls and the rest as a new cabin as well versus an old cabin.
I don't know what the classification of that structure is, if it's a cabin or not, is probably a question. In the conservation easement, it allows a single-family residential dwelling and a secondary dwelling. Only that secondary dwelling is limited in square footage, so it's in conformance with the conservation easement.
But it is a habitable structure.
That's a structure. That's a residence in our classification under the conservation easement. Conservation easement classifications are different than county rules.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
In other words, it's not up to CCAL to make sure that our...
No, I understand that. That's why I was
building requirements to
follow them up.
Yeah, and conservation easements will... Whatever we say in there has to last forever, and county rules can change.
No,
which is
why
we're not like,
oh,
it's
just whatever.
I
understand
county
that too.
Rules.
So, yeah, we'll follow up with Alan.
Make sure they're following the
hunting
rules.
Cabin just might just have appeared. That was one there before.
They're all tagged as conservation easements on the building software,
which is really helpful. I like that Alan coordinates with us.
Yep. So
good.
And also is a visible in the assessor's page, too.
Yeah.
All the easements are tagged.
Yeah, because they're definitely tagged conservation, because they still get ag classification even without having cows on it or without using ag.
Oh, because of the easement?
Conservation easement. They still get ag classification.
Huh.
Yeah.
Good to know.
One other question, just out of curiosity. We have 27... properties conserved using PDR money?
Yes.
How many others does CCAL have?
Except May, the May Ranch.
Huh?
The May Ranch isn't, right?
Yeah.
That
was a transfer from YVLT. I think it was maybe done under like a exploratory PDR program or something, but the county does have money in it.
Oh.
It's just not, it was before the program
was
actually
before we
established.
Had the tax.
Yeah.
So, but we just still report on it.
Yeah. The same thing with there was another one, I can't remember.
I think the Stankos original one is like that too.
Yeah, something.
Or maybe one of Vernon Summers.
Yeah, I know there's a couple that are like that.
Yeah.
Well, very good.
Well, I don't think she answered my question.
What was your question? I don't think, did you finish your question?
How many other
how many
properties
others?
That are not PDR funded does CCAL have approximately?
In Route County?
Yeah, I'm not looking for an exact number, but surely you have some.
I think our total is around 38, so it would
be
about
be 10
11
or
more. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So I imagine those two numbers put together, I imagine you're pushing 40,000 acres pretty hard.
This is the total acreage.
Oh, that is
includes
all
everything.
The 32,000 acres?
Yep.
Okay.
So since we're not in executive session and we're here and we still don't have time, are you guys following? Last year we stayed abreast of some legislation that Representative Lewis was working on and we weren't supportive of.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a similar bill again this year. So
mm-hmm.
Are you guys, is Eric following any other bills that we need to be aware of to know, to be of assistance as we move down through the legislative role?
We're still early in the legislative session.
It's halfway, thank God.
Yeah. There's a lot of
things come up at the last minute, even. I mean, it's a bit crazy.
Oh, I think there's a lot of things that intentionally come
intentionally.
Yes. Yeah. I don't have the legislative update. Eric will have to follow up with you on that.
Well, bounce him an email and say if he has something that he needs to have Rob County assist him in his moderation efforts, if we would agree with that. I mean, if we would agree with his position, we would be willing to support that in our efforts as we outreach as well.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. I'll have him send you guys a quick update anyway as to where everything stands with easement legislation.
Good.
Okay. I don't have any other questions.
Nope.
Guys?
Nope. Thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll have the city come up next.
Okay.
And that's for the one project, the Lafarge.
Yeah, hi, my name's Jenny Carey.
Hi, Jenny. City of Steeple.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Parks and Rec. Yeah, so the Lafarge property, pretty straightforward. I don't know if you guys had any questions about the report, or do you want me to... We don't have any concerns.
Oh, Doug loves talking about the old gravel pit.
I love gravel pits. This is a great use for when that pit's done, too. So, you know, hey, everybody benefits on this one, so... No, I don't... all the monitoring's going all right?
Yeah, again, no concerns. Everything's pretty much same year to year. I put in a few photos this year just to...
Spice
I felt out. Like I needed to make let people know we were actually going out there, but again, no concerns at the property. So.
I'm just working on pulling this up. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
We have a very large packet to sift through.
So this one, this has does this have public access?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, it's part of the Chuck Lewis.
So, yeah, managed by CPW. Yeah, right. Chuck Lewis. Yeah, exactly. Extension of that.
So this must not be the parcel that CPW is thinking about building on.
No, that's what we were having that conversation about. No. I don't have any other questions, so.
I don't think I have any questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I said, pretty straightforward. So.
Right. Yeah, thank you.
All right, yep, thanks so
thank
much.
You.
I will, Brian, if you want to come up, I'll just give a quick update. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation did not mention any newsworthy items either on the Wolf Mountain or the Thorpe Mountain. The Nature Conservancy, Jeff also did not have anything other than he also mentioned it was a dry year and everyone adjusted accordingly. He did mention that the Tremaine property, that TNT, was up for sale. The sale fell through and it's back for sale.
What? Say that again?
The, which one is it? The 4.2 TNT land and cattle. That property was for sale.
Okay.
There was a contract on it, but
it fell through.
Fell through, so they placed it on the market again. And otherwise, nothing else to report. And so Ryan has 22 projects to report on.
actually, a couple more that that the county has interest in. So I think your call holder on Carpenter Ranch, and.
The Summer Ranch was
the Summer PDR. Ranch has right. county funds, but yep. not PDR, and I included that. And then the Justice Center,
owned
by the county. Yeah, so we've included that in here. So this year we've incorporated a flight into our monitoring, and that helps us see things that we might not otherwise see.
Incorporated what?
A flight.
So like with a drone. Right?
Okay.
No. So
an airplane?
Yeah, so an entity called Lighthawk, they're a nonprofit, and they put us up in the air for free, and we get to...
I follow them.
Yeah, so you know. So we can see
the ones that take Beth down to down the river.
Are you going
to
go on the plane flight?
Yeah. Is that who
awesome.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's almost as good as a river trip.
So in addition, or I shouldn't say in addition to, but... as a part of our annual monitoring, we've incorporated that. And the state legislation and rules that they're just promulgating requires us to visit our properties once every 5 years by foot if we're incorporating this flight thing. But we plan to, you know, maybe do a flight once every 3 years or something like that. And I think it was you, Doug, you mentioned a summary of the monitoring reports last year instead of looking through like 100, 200 pages.
Which is fine, and we had opportunity the weekend, and so
right.
We didn't have any football to watch. The Broncos weren't playing, so.
So I have
something to be grateful for, huh?
No kidding. So we got to review 600 pages of conservation.
If you have a choice, I'd take the 600 pages.
So I just put this together so you guys can kind of see.
Awesome.
Yep. If there are any issues or anything of note that that we are monitoring or that you guys should know about, probably the biggest issue that we found this past season is on the Fulton Ranch, and the landowner leases it for hunting, and one of his lessees blazed a road where he wasn't supposed to with a dozer. And he didn't know about it. He discovered it, brought it to our attention, let us know that he knew he wasn't supposed to do it. He plans to reclaim it. And so that was the biggest issue. A couple other things related to boundary stuff, technical things that we're planning to work on. The Iron Springs Ranch, that's been ongoing leafy spurge treatment. The county weed coordinator has been up there, not this past year, but the year before. He's been
That's below stagecoach.
Staying updated on the status.
Yeah,
of that.
And I think originally there was a little bit of difficulty getting the landowner to fully commit to that control and eradication process. So I guess that would be my question: is the landowner fully engaged and fully committed?
He's committed, and his daughter is now. I shouldn't say taken over, but she's taken a big role in their operation now. Frank's getting up there in age, and she seems pretty on top of things and interested in.
Yeah, so this is an item of really big concern to us.
Yeah.
We're really worried about that isolated outbreak, its proximity to the river, the potential for the seed to be spread down. So,
yeah.
I'm not sure that the terms of the conservation easement actually necessarily require the landowner to control it, but I think it would
states that it's the landowner's responsibility, however they interpret that. But we've been working closely with the landowners, and because it's such a big patch, they've been doing flights.
Yep.
And then the
aerial
the stuff that's not within the big patch, they've been bringing a contractor on an ATV around.
Okay.
What causes that? I mean, I know that's a little bit of a tangent.
With the leafy spurge would be a really long conversation.
Right, I'm aware of
probably
that,
sheep.
But like an outbreak.
Generally,
like that.
It comes from somebody buying hay from somewhere else that has it in it and then feeding it on that property.
Got
and,
it.
And
okay.
The seeds get on that spread.
Yeah, the landowner suspects sheep, and he hadn't been up there in quite a while. And we discovered it, and it had been pretty big. So yeah, not discovering it and giving it several years for the root system to build up energy. And Greg also said that, you know, it's going to take several years of treatment for it to kill that root system.
So next year you'll be reporting to us on the progress that's been made on that.
Uh-huh.
I'm hearing that it's getting treated.
It's getting treated.
I'm not hearing that it's getting better.
Yeah, Greg would like to see the herbicide having more impact, but
okay.
And everybody would, but it's just, I guess, a matter of killing that root system down there.
Got it.
So I guess I have a question then. So LaSalle Cattle Company,
I was going to mention it's
up for sale, and I think probably that's the other one we have is the May Ranch is currently back up for sale.
Oh, it is?
So that was actually transferred to Cattlemen's Land Trust.
Yeah.
Which we didn't ask about, but I think it's still up for sale. But anyhow, LaSalle Cap, any other ones that we have here?
So LaSalle is on the market, and I think it's being marketed in Texas. I don't know that I saw it up here.
Where is that?
That's one across
west of
town. West, yeah, east of Milner.
Okay.
The one across from that gravel pit right there, which okay. he then bought to LaSalle Cattle. So he was originally going to modify that easement and then build a house.
He did. He relocated a building site, but he has not constructed his building.
So did we modify the easement?
Yeah, it was modified.
We moved it from
ago.
One because it was
one
like
acreage
in the
to another?
Yeah, it was in the middle and we moved
so
it closer
to the road.
So it was location
neutral and impact neutral.
Right. I recall us approving that.
And
yeah.
We moved it up
closer to a road already that was there or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. That's good.
And then Weibel is also for sale, and that's an interesting one that we just discovered. Last week that he's wanting to sell 50% interest in the entity that owns the property.
Huh. How does that affect us if 50% of the interest is sold but not all of it?
So the easement allows for different ownership structures, if you will. You can't subdivide the property and create two pieces, but you can have several different owners or two owners. Each owns 50%. And we're exploring what the end goal really is. If that's to
so
increase.
He's going to sell 50% or some interest. In,
that's the
in
way
the
it was
ranch.
Marketed.
In the operation, whatever.
We just discovered last week.
Should be pretty straightforward. All the terms of the easement transfer to the whatever the new ownership structure is.
Right. Our concern is with the commercial activity. He's got a cheese dairy operation going on out there.
We've heard.
Yeah, we can.
And we want to make sure that that doesn't get out of control. That stays
nobody
in the
wants
terms
out
of
control
of
cheese.
Okay, so the conservation easement is specific about the scale of that commercial operation?
There was an interpretation of the easement done by a previous director that indicates that it has to be largely from products grown on the property and a small scale, however small is interpreted.
That's probably would also be the same as our regulations, that kind of a commercial enterprise has to depend primarily
yeah, but
upon
it still ended up being an ag operation, which was fine. It got into the building permit was where we had the problems.
Right, but it's what would not be allowed even under our zoning regulations would be the importation of, say, milk product to produce cheese. It would have to be
yeah.
milk that is
Long, yeah.
generated on the property.
Yeah.
Do people go there to purchase milk or
cheese is
or sorry cheese
not that we're aware of he's marketing
that wouldn't
in
be allowed,
local
right?
stores no that wouldn't
okay.
Well we have farm stand regulations
oh,
that would
okay.
certainly permit a certain scale of that. So one of the other things I forgot to bring up with the other organizations that might be of some interest to you, Beth, is and be great to hear you address at least how your organization is dealing with this, has always been a concern of mine when we talk about conservation easements that are to be monitored in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. And the concept is that each one of these organizations has an endowment fund that theoretically will provide the resources necessary to continue to monitor these easements in perpetuity, which is kind of
forever is a long time.
It's
yeah.
a hard thing to get your mind around.
It's a very long time.
So, how does Yampa Valley Land?
Yeah, so we collect a stewardship fee. Currently, I believe it's $20,000, and then there's also a I'm not sure what we actually call this, but it's another $4,500 legal defense fee. So about $24,500 for every new project. And historically, I don't know how it had been configured, but we always calculated something. And the idea is that the interest or the return on investment that bears is to pay for our time to go out and monitor as well as defend any issues. And the $4,500 that we now charge is part of a legal defense insurance program that generates interest that goes to pay the premium.
Is that fairly recent?
The insurance program is within, I believe, the last 5 years that that had taken off. And so if there's an issue that requires legal, any legal, I shouldn't say legal work, I think there's a threshold, whether it's actually in the court system or something like that, that they will come in and pay the costs of that. Some of these organizations with less of an endowment could, they could be bankrupted if they didn't have this. Mm-hmm. But I think we have somewhere between 1.3 to 1.5 million endowment that generates return that we use to go and do this stuff. And there's a requirement.
Are your bylaws written in such a way that that money can't be commingled with your operations?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also part of the oversight by the state and the Land Trust Alliance, which is an independent group that oversees land trusts, have a requirement that we keep those separate. They can only be used for certain purposes related to the stewardship stuff. And there's a minimum that they require that you have for,
good,
you know, X amount of units you need to have.
Your guys are
this.
At least
yep, the we are.
Great. Do you have a current executive director?
We do not at the moment. So okay. It's myself and my coworker Bryce Hinchman.
Are kind of fulfilling that role on an interim basis?
Yeah.
Or a permanent basis?
Yep. Interim, I believe.
Okay.
So,
and how many people are on your board?
Six at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So when a landowner, I mean, I'm just scrolling back through some of these, you know, when it says there's trash on the property and the owner indicated he's cleaning it up, or there, do we just trust that they're going to do that before the next time you come out? I mean, what's the...
Follow-up.
Yeah. So you do engage in follow-up when those things are happening? You don't
generally
just go out this one time a year?
Yeah, if we discover something that needs to be addressed.
It's pushing pretty hard with the trash, and, you know, so
right, it's
good that,
yeah,
you know, they're following up and
yep,
trying to keep it clean, but, you know, that... pushing it, whether that's in a conflict of the conservation easement.
Yep, absolutely.
If I was the owner, I would push back.
Yeah,
and say, none of your business.
Hey, you know, that's
yeah,
essential trash. That's the baler that's going to replace the other baler when it breaks down.
Never that roller bar off.
You never know.
Right. But anyhow.
I gotcha. Just wondering, you know, what the follow-up is on, and some of those items... I guess they're just for our information to report those. Okay.
And most of them have, you know, I mean, you guys probably have a nature conservancy on my conservation easement. They have six locations they take pictures of every year. So they go, and you guys do, and then you're doing a flyover once every 5 years as well.
Yeah, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, so anyhow, so then they go to that same place and same picture, so that way it kind of documents for their file
right, that
there's been no migration of things happening and the rest.
Yeah. Got it.
Are you, you have other easements that are not part of the
correct
PDR program, and those are not listed here.
Correct. Yep.
And you have other easements, not necessarily in Rouse County, too.
Yeah, we have 20 to 30,000 acres in Rio Blanco County, pretty much all of them near Meeker. A couple in Jackson County as well.
Great. Do you have any new ones that you guys
are
working on?
Yeah, we do. So we've got six in the works at the moment.
Great.
Glad
to hear it.
All in Rout County.
Good.
They're the ones that we've already approved?
Yeah, several of them are.
Yeah, and we don't want to talk about them. So
then we have two more.
Two more that are going to be coming in for the next round?
Oh.
That's what
one possibly.
That's what we can't talk
about.
That's
what we can't talk about, right?
Well, we can't talk about the other ones either.
The ones that have
Oh, they haven't been funded.
They haven't been finalized.
Oh, right.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah, so one possibly two in addition.
So don't ask questions like that, Tim.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm just generally speaking.
No, I know.
It's good to hear that they have, because I know you guys have gone through some difficult times over the last couple, 3 years, and it's good to know that, I mean, you, to be a viable organization, you need to continue doing some of these easements. So
yeah, we've been making a lot of progress on that end.
Well, great.
Wonderful.
I don't have anything more.
Me either.
Great.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thanks, Ryan.
You bet.
Well, last year we had an hour and a half, and an hour, and we went over. We had people waiting here and whatever.
Huh.
This year I did 1 hour and a half.
Why did it take so much longer last year?
Because Tim asked a bunch of questions, probably.
And I think TNC was here, and we got...
Last year, Tim was pushing pretty hard on the endowment fund across the board on everybody.
Yeah.
And making sure everybody...
Yeah. Thanks again.
So we've got some time to kill, huh?
Yeah, sorry about
that. So I thought you had...
I hate to do that.
Purchase a...
Yeah, I have Claire come in.
Oh, at 2:30.
At 2:30.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's all right. We can just take a break.
Yeah.
I have things to do.
I was hoping that the others would have showed up, and then there would have been more discussion.
Especially it's not
TNC.
A big deal.
TNC, Jeff can really get something.
It's all right. We just do the best we can. Sounds good. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, there's a new one.
There it is. They printed it the first time and it only had one M in commissioner. They had to redo it.
Commissar.
Commissar. Absolutely. All right, so you're giving us the annual report of the... Sorry, I don't have the agenda right in front of me.
Did you send those to us?
Yeah, it's...
The purchase
it's of on the... Right, it's in your packet. You don't have it?
Yeah, let me have one.
I'll share.
It was at the bottom of the 650 pages.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
You didn't make that far?
I think I just stumbled to it by then.
Yeah. This is the annual report of the Citizens Advisory Committee of the Rock County Purchase and Development Rights Program. And this past year, in 2018, we had three projects that were funded, totaling $1.65 million and an additional $50,000 in transaction costs having been reimbursed after we received appropriate proof of the expenditure. We are now at a point where we've about almost 50,000 acres have been conserved through our program. And in 2018, we added 3,752.84 acres. And in those three projects, let's go through this a little bit here, the Knott Place, the Knott family.
Which is where Megan, who was here earlier from Colorado Cattlemen's, lives.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
In fact, the first conservation easement, the project that went through on that particular piece of land is when Megan met her husband, her now husband. And that project, what they did is they added some more acreage on that. And our total funding per acre for PDR dollars was $862.
That's including the whole thing or the addition from this year?
The 2018 addition.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. High Country Lamb, right across the county, 131 from Peaburg. And that property, really amazing gatekeeper, if you will, route from south of Rouse County into the Steamboat area. And the views are just outstanding when you get up there, and you can certainly visualize that it would be a perfect place for a series of 35-acre ranchettes or something of greater density. And that particular project, the total cost for PDR came out to $528 per acre. And then the third one that went through this year was the unique one, the first of
well, not the first, but one of the unique ones we have with respect to looking forward to providing some public access and opportunities in this particular parcel. The Flanders wanted to work with CPW, and they are still working with CPW to provide an access agreement across their property to the river. And so it'll be CPW will manage it in combination with their other lands.
The agreement came through for us. They are in the final.
The final.
Yeah.
That was one that had to have an act of Congress.
Capital. What are they?
A literal act of Congress?
No,
or not?
But it's
a state level. Okay.
Yeah. There's a committee.
State Senate committee.
The Capitol. What do they call it? The Capitol?
Yeah, the Capitol Committee.
The
yeah.
Capitol Committee.
Why?
Because
was that what we signed that letter for?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks for the reminder.
Yep. Any time that there's an acquisition of property by the state of Colorado, it has to be approved by the Capital Development Committee? Or
something like that. It's the Senate Capital Committee.
Right.
Got it.
Which was, there have been transfers in the past that have been held up by our state senator, former state senators.
This went through finance.
I can't help but smile when I use that phrase, but go ahead.
PDR cost per acre on the Flanders Ranch was $238. So, and again, that's pretty exciting to look forward to, some public opportunity for fishing. The Flanders did receive a nice donation from GOCO with regard to, again, the public access opportunities there. And then, of course, because it's riverfront and we're protecting the riparian habitat on that one. Overall, on those two projects, the Knott family, they contributed a little over 65% of the value of the conservation easement. High Country Land, their contribution was about almost 59%, and the Flanders, their contribution was considerably less, mostly because they got such a sizable contribution from GOCO. So we are on track to keeping pretty darn close to that 50% landowner contribution that we like to see. It's not written in stone by any means, and certainly we've had a number of applications that have been significantly less than 50%, and a few that have been more than 50% as well. Overall, we haven't calculated out yet our funding per acre. Am I correct?
It should be in there on the average. It's just a little over 500.
523
overall average.
And our historical average has been about 500.
Yeah.
Another way of looking at that is, as Commissioner Monger has mentioned many times, we're in essence in the business of purchasing home sites to take them off the market. So if you think about a 35-acre parcel, we're spending $523 per acre. So $18,000 the Purchase of Development Rights Program is put in to prevent the building of a house on a 35-acre parcel.
Right.
It's one way of looking at it, among many other ways.
And part of our criteria, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, but one of the things that we do look at is whether or not these particular projects are located in a suitable area. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if they were located in a growth corridor, it would be one of those situations where, we don't want to be getting involved in doing things that are contrary to local planning. We've had a couple of smaller projects with the city that have dovetailed into existing parcels, like, for example, Emerald Mountain. There was a small piece that was acquired through PDR dollars in part that allows access from the treehouse area up to Emerald. And also there's the Fournier piece that is now becoming, unfortunately, no longer the secret spot. It's becoming really popular, and that's the one that's located just west of Bowling Alley. And that permits the public to have access to the river. And some people use it to go into the river and float down. Some people take out there. Some people fish there, and so on and so forth. So it's a nice location there. And that, we're looking forward to some more projects and hearing that there's a few coming down the road.
So Claire would tell you when I was first elected commissioner, I was came in a little bit hot about the PDR program. I had some concerns around...
Understand.
I had some real concerns around public access, and it took me quite a while to come to terms with the fact that the ballot language that the voters approved never said anything about public access, and that that was never the intent of the program. It's taken me a while, but I accept that, but I certainly appreciate it when we've had the opportunity, like we did on the Flanders Ranch, to gain some public access, that that we at least tried to take advantage of that. So that's a good thing. I had some real concerns about some of the values that were placed on some of the properties, or the diminution, did I pronounce that correctly? The diminution of value being sometimes, I thought, overstated on certain pieces of property. And I still think that that actually was the case on at least one or two properties. But since then, it seems like the appraisals have been coming back in areas that I'm quite a bit more comfortable with. So I can't say enough about the work that these guys do. I think the projects that come to us have been really thoroughly vetted. They make sense. I think Claire addressed. They've been very thoughtful about where these projects are at, and that they're not going to take away obvious future development properties out of the mix. And the properties that have been brought forward and that we've approved, you know, fit the spirit and the letter of the law of what was intended by the voters, in my view.
So the interesting thing is time flies fast.
I know.
We got a 20-year extension in 2005. So it's
2025.
Up to 2025. So.
I thought it said 2026 in here.
2026 would be the formal
okay.
sunset. However, in order to, if the project is going to be continued, we need to start
yes.
looking at
so again,
in that
we'll
in
have,
4 years.
We'll have the ability to spend whatever monies are there mm-hmm. left. But so, yeah, and again, 2025, so we'll probably, I mean, it'll have to be on the election before 2025, so that 2025 tax year would be collected in 2026 would
right.
be...
Right, and what we
almost
did,
have to do a 2024 ballot measure.
Yes, I think it needs to be, and we
yeah.
did
Which
that
we did
previously.
Last time. It's 2 years before.
We did it 2 years prior with the realization that if there was an issue, the first go round, then we could address some of those issues associated with the public's concerns, and hopefully get it passed the second time around before it sunsets.
I saw the thing. It's $1.4 million is what you're collecting.
That's
I thought
about
it was higher
what,
than that.
Well, it all depends.
Because of the tax. The
value. Yeah, it all depends on the
assessed
on the
value.
Because at one
I
time I thought
gotten...
we were getting 1.8 or something.
You were?
It's that TIF money.
No.
Oh.
Well,
we were.
There is some TIF money.
There was 1.6 one time. I haven't been able to. I haven't gotten the real revenue for this year yet.
So it definitely fluctuates.
And then as a matter of practice, you guys have not tried to build up a reserve. You're making the effort to spend the money as it comes in.
Not necessarily. What we do is our goal is to fund projects that deserve to be funded. And so we've been extremely fortunate that almost every year we
okay.
receive projects that are well-deserving of being funded.
So we have not built up reserves.
No. No, and that's because of the fact that the projects that came forward were fundable, if so to speak. Mm-hmm. We've had a couple
well,
of years.
To follow up on that, though, they've had more grant requests than they've had money for
right.
and have had to actually reduce the size of the grants based on what they had, from what they had asked for originally.
Right.
So
right.
that's why we've been ending up spending all the money because all the money's been going
which
out
I right. think is a,
the last
a
few
good
years.
Practice, I think.
I was going to say, I think there's only been a couple of years where we had enough money to fully fund
yeah.
For projects that also deserved it. We've had a couple of years where it's like, sorry,
not good projects.
It just doesn't.
Like there's been a couple of years where we've had money turned back from
right because the property owner wanted X amount and the grant was you know less than what they wanted,
and they tried to appeal, if you will, to us to have more money granted, and it was, no, this is under our criteria based on the other applications. And I think we've had three pull out because of that. One was a Yampa Valley project, the Brown property.
A long time ago.
That was a long time ago, and they wanted an inordinate amount of money. And, then two more on top of that.
The one down by the mine, and then the one by Stagecoach.
Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple projects where we've, if you will, sent them back to the drawing board to say, you didn't address this issue, you're asking for us to fund a certain amount of property that really doesn't fit within our criteria, and this portion does, but this portion doesn't, and encourage people to come back. And we've had two of those
in phases.
Or flat out redo it because part of the property just clearly didn't meet the criteria. So it would have been put us in the position of, we weren't really comfortable doing it. So we're rolling along and keeping busy.
How is this board appointed?
By you.
Every year?
No. We have rotating terms.
6 years? Four and six? Now we're on four, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Staggered terms. Myself and Carl Vail have been on the board since its inception in 95.
I'm the newest member.
Yeah, he's the newbie.
Newbie.
But I'll be leaving, so.
What?
You didn't see the email?
No.
Didn't see that?
Did you not send it?
I thought I sent it.
Yeah, you did.
I didn't see it.
Oh, it might be in my...
Did you have Claire's permission to leave?
Yeah, wait a minute.
I didn't have your permission.
Usually when somebody wants to leave, they have to bring a replacement.
Oh.
Yeah, that's our usual way of working it.
And it was hard to get a replacement in my area.
It was. Yeah. Oh.
Do you have a timeline, John?
Yeah, things that we bought and sold within less than 2 weeks.
You already sold yours?
Yes, and we closed on April 16th, and we're out of here.
Whoa, where are you going?
Oregon coast. My wife has some health issues that we need to get to a single level house and lower altitude. And so we're downsizing, but the place is right on the Pacific Ocean. It's really nice.
Lifestyle.
So you're expecting some visitors, I would think.
Come visit them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have downsized. Why don't you get a big house?
Where is it?
Yahats, it is between Newport and Florence in the Central Coast. It's a little town. It's back to what, Steamboat? It used to be 750 people. Yeah. No postal service on weekends. It's hardly any cell phone coverage.
That sounds lovely.
You could have just moved to Yampa for all of that.
No mail. No cell phone.
So I guess we need to go through some reappointment process.
Yep, I will place the ad in the paper, in our website and social media and stuff. I'll start posting that and see if we get any interest.
So sometime you ought to also, the criteria that you guys have that you review all the time, it'd be good if you have that electronically. Why don't you forward that over to the three of us again just to look at it?
That'd be great. I'd love to see this.
And it is, a dead set criteria, but it kind of ranks them, the projects and the rest. It doesn't determine whether they're going to recommend funding or not, but it's because you kind of a little bit of scorecard to work off of. So
yeah, I'll send it.
We do go on trips to review the properties before we sit down and assess them. And I think all of us can say that sometimes those field trips have changed our minds on a project. Some projects look great on paper, and then you get out there, and it's like, and the landowner's enthusiasm and such makes a big difference on what they're trying to accomplish. Does he serve a certain area or a certain look?
I think so.
Yeah, it was.
I think it's the.
It was in Carrie's area.
Yeah, I think it's district. It was the district.
And that's some of the appointments are made. I think mine's conservation or.
You're at large.
At large. I'm in. There's two or three at large, and then the rest are because you're south.
Commissioner districts.
Yeah. Pretty close.
Yeah.
And you've been on the board almost as long as Carl and
yeah, pretty close.
Yeah.
So I put in that for the start, but I said, if you got somebody else, point them, please.
Now look at him.
That was Wanda.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
So corralled me when she quit.
So Dean's Ranch was one of the first ranches placed under a conservation easement in Rock County, is that correct?
Well, actually, it's the first one in the state to use GOCO funds. Yeah.
Okay, that was it.
So, yeah, I have the photo of it next to my desk.
Yeah, the easements are around here a lot before we got into the program.
Right, right. But I knew the Dean's was on the front end. That was it. It was when GOCO first got involved.
Yeah. Fetcher did some along 129 too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's that?
Fetcher?
Yeah.
They did
now, mine
there.
Was in 94. So.
Yours is 94.
Yeah, yours was a little bit after Fetcher's, I think. Or right about the
right
same
after, time. Yeah.
Right.
It was before we had any of the program or whatever.
And you may not know this, but Rock County has become a poster child of sorts for
I
this
do know
program.
That, actually.
And we regularly get inquiries on how in the world did you do that?
Yeah.
So.
I spent a lot of time with Jay Fetcher during the election, so I have a lot.
Okay.
I've received much background information.
Well, it certainly supports Rock County's master plan,
absolutely,
our open space.
Mm-hmm. I think just hearkening back to your baby commissioner days, the pushback I hear from folks most often is about public access, and so I think. I mean, not saying anything specific about that, but that's when people say things like, well, what is this? We're using public money and we're not protecting public access or increasing public access. So I think, it's just important to be aware of that question going into it being on the ballot.
When we approve one of these and it goes to, it's really important to tout the other benefits. And,
right.
And one of the big ones, obviously, has been the wildlife connections.
Right.
So forth and corridors. And that's been just wonderful how you look on a map and it just pieces, it's starting to really piece itself.
Yeah, so, north of Hayden, that whole area there is the wildlife, whole interstate there.
Absolutely.
And you have to balance the issue with the public access as well because the detriment to wildlife habitat with Emerald Mountain.
You wouldn't have had, it wouldn't have passed the ballot election if we would have had, if you had mandated public access.
And you would have gotten very few
He wouldn't have had any. I wouldn't do that. If
yeah. Well, and I'm not necessarily
access,
making any specific suggestion, just bringing it to the attention. That,
yep.
I mean, that is, I think,
sure.
Where
I always say that
from.
Somebody mentions that to me, I says, why is there locks on the courthouse door? If public access, taxpayer money, I'd be able to come in here and use the computer.
Let's not
whatever.
Get carried away.
You know how to use a computer? You know how to use a computer?
I can play solitaire on
it. Helena, the map that was in our packet, has that been updated recently?
Yes. It has the 2018 projects on it.
It does, good.
Yeah.
Good. And, of course, all you can really update there is the PDR-supported easements. There may be other easements that have taken place that we just don't know about.
We tend to gather it from the assessor and update with those yellow layers.
So you're beginning to you feel like this map that we have in our packet is pretty close to accurate.
Yes. Yeah. There might be some that slipped through, but we've been trying to gather the information from the assessors. And updated. We did a big update last year with all those other conservation easements. That's why there's a lot of yellow on the
right.
on the map.
And then routinely, TNC and Yampa Valley and Cattlemen's, all three of those routinely provide updated private conservation instruments, funding from other sources as well as ours. Because I know one of the things that's really starting to show up again, getting back to the wildlife corridor, is that big game corridor that's going from all the way north down to the south.
Yeah, down right down to Craig right now. It's sitting right in the wildlife corridors, right in. The other night we went to the old movie theater, you know,
the
drive-in theater. There were a whole herd right there.
Was there?
10 o'clock at night. I mean, there, you've seen the herd about the wildlife. They've been getting hammered between Hayden and Craig right now. Mm. All winter.
Wow.
Anyhow, the wildlife corridor is great. I was just making
comments. Conservation.
At the, this year, there was a challenge coming forth from certain areas of the state level for, you know, trying to change the program, which we wrote in and said, please not to. Because it's running pretty darn good and everything. Is there any more rumblings you're getting from anything?
Well, they're still talking about, you know, some GOCO realignment, GOCO monies. There's some grumbling going on there. I don't know, that's going to have to come to an election.
It was voted in.
I mean, there's some discussions about reallocating those monies away from the four pots that they have right now. I haven't heard specifics, but somebody's out there doing that, Have you heard any more?
No, I haven't heard anything about it.
Claire, did we have any other projects that didn't get finalized this year?
Oh, there were quite a few. There's six open right now. Well, minus the... So there's, there's six left.
There's six,
We just can't talk about them.
No.
Nope. Not in public media.
Yes. And a couple of them have public access in different areas, kind of different uses. So if they go through, be nice.
And then one other thing I'm pretty sure you know, Commissioner Melton, is that most of the time mineral rights are not included in the conservation easement. So there is always the potential that we could see a drilling rig on one of these properties.
And have.
Yeah. Yeah, we have. Yep, that's right. And that would be an opportunity for us to educate our constituents on why that is.
And that's because, as you know, a large percentage of mineral interests are severed from the surface rights and have been for eons. And people who do own, however, the mineral rights, that is encumbered as well in the conservation easement deed. And then, of course, they can't control what happens in the peripheral area as far as underground work.
Yeah.
But certainly...
So that's a matter, of course, if the mineral rights are not severed, then those mineral rights are excluded.
Yeah, we put them in the easement,
Okay.
That's why we were so upset with that one easement, that they transferred the easement
out of the family right
or
at the last
to
second.
The family before he got
encumbered. that was a challenging time.
But the really big one is that we always keep the water on the property. That's huge for Rob County.
Absolutely.
For the whole river system.
Yep.
Not this year. We should be good.
We'll see.
It's a long winter, but you know.
Well, the old time winter is finally.
Looks like it right now.
I don't know. DOW is saying this morning it's about over.
Is that right?
Yeah. On that moose that was killed at the.
Oh, is that right? That the winter's
over? The baby, the winter's over with, so the baby's going to be fine. So. Just not sure where they're taking the baby to.
Well, it's last year's baby. I mean, it was last spring's baby.
Wasn't it? It's 10 months old.
Yeah, exactly. So,
he was having breakfast at my place.
That was from the moose whisperer, right?
I appreciate your time. I don't have any other questions. I'm sure over the years I'll become more familiar with this program and have more to say about it, but I appreciate the information.
Sure.
Definitely.
John, thank you very much.
Oh,
Really appreciate your work.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks, John.
You know how much I love the county.
Planning
Enjoy
commission, too.
Yep, forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck to you, John.
No, we're
thanks a lot.
Water.
Yeah. I'm going to miss you.
It's not warm on the coast, though.
Well,
don't get excited about that. It's really cold.
Right,
we spent my whole life on the Washington and Oregon coast growing up, and there are pictures of us in July in our winter coats on the beach.
Yeah. I want to go see Crater.
It's not on the coast.
So you'll have to record it.
I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss the performance review of the county manager. This executive session is being electronically recorded, but minutes of the meeting will not be produced. This is an executive session for the following purpose: for discussion of a personnel matter under CRS section 24-6-4024F1 and 2, and not involving any specific employees who have requested discussion of the matter in open session, any member of this body or an elected official, the appointment of any person to fill an office of this body or of an elected official, or personnel policies that do not require the discussion of matters personal to particular employees. I caution each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session, and that no formal action may occur in the executive session. If at any point in the executive session any participant believes the discussion is going outside the proper scope of the executive session, please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is March 5th, 2019, and the time is 3:03 p.m.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So we need just one. Session has been concluded. The following persons were present at this executive session: Commissioner Tim Corrigan, myself, Commissioner Beth Melton, Commissioner Doug Monger, and County Manager Tom Sullivan. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken.
So we're adjourned.
We're adjourned.
Day.